sitting in my office with a plate of grilled bacon. Call my man Pat just to see what was shaking.
Yo, Mike, our town is dope and pretty.
So check out how we live.
In the Electric City.
They call it Scranton.
What?
The Electric City. Scranton.
What?
The Electric City.
Lazy Scranton, the Electric City.
They welcome call to it the Pinstripe Valley podcast. Yankees won today, but they lost the previous two games to the Houston Astros, and that's just about the most embarrassing thing in the world, especially considering they're in Yankee Stadium. But so it goes with the 2014 Yankees. Just after taking two out of three from Tampa and with the last two victories before the Astros series, it looked like maybe they might go on something. But then they're like, nah, we're not going to play well against Brett Oberholzer and Scott Feldman because reasons. what did you think of those two series, Matt F. Methy?
I think you just stopped disrespecting Peter Seguin winner Brett Oberholzer.
Yeah.
You have to respect the process.
Yeah, he's the future. Not Brady Aiken, Brett Oberholzer.
Yeah, these two series kind of just reminded me of what we were talking about last week, that it's not even that they're just losing, it's just unwatchably losable. It's just so unwatchable and so, like, it's just boring. And it's partially just because offense is down in general. So if this was 2004 and they were hitting like this, maybe they'd still score like four runs a game. So it's partially that, but it's also the fact that, yeah, they're just not scoring any runs in a very low run scoring environment. So the games are not only bad, but just boring and slow.
And it was also just really frustrating in those first two games because the bullpen, which has been pretty good for the Yankees this year, just had a bad couple of days. Robertson gave up the big home run to Chris Carter on, it was Tuesday?
Yeah.
Tuesday night. And then, because everyone is gassed, Girardi had to go with Esmail Rogers. And who was the other guy? Oh, Adam Warren pitched on Tuesday, and he pitched badly.
Oh, he also went with David Huff, I think.
David Huff, with David Huff.
And that worked out swimmingly. worked out exactly as you'd expect.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of unfortunate. I feel like he probably could have gone with Kelly, but I don't really expect most managers to do that, just because he had already designated Kelly as his eighth inning guy for that day, so. But obviously, I think you have to blame the offense more for that because they're just not scoring many runs, and it's really hard to win games when you only score a couple runs. And even today, they only scored three runs against Dallas Keuchel, but Brandon McCarthy pitched an absolute gem, so that's one way around it.
Yeah, hard to win when you don't score at all. And what's really weird is that this offense is still better than last year's, which is, I guess, more of a testament to last year, but at the same time, it's not that much better.
Yeah, and it's more frustrating because, like, they built the offense to be better than last year's, too. I mean, you can find some problems with relying too much on Beltran, as we discussed last week, because, you know, these projections took in his injury history and all that. But the fact of the matter is that they were supposed to be better than this, and the 2013 offense really wasn't after the injuries. Because, you know, they had, like, too much Vernon Wells, too much Lyle O'Brien, all of those other names we named in that trivia thing last week.
Yeah. Because right now they're ranked 20th in WRC+, and it's a 92. And I think last year it was, like, 88.
Yeah, that's not that much better.
It's not that much better, but it's the difference between being near the middle and near all the way at the bottom.
Yeah, of course, they are in, like, the wrong half of the league, too, and that's not helping.
Yes, and they're also in the American League, yeah.
And it doesn't help that Carlos Beltran now might be hurt again, too, with his elbow and needing another cortisone shot.
Just as he was starting to hit as well.
Yeah.
So,
I guess we should wait for Matt F.
Yeah.
Yeah,
find
his way back.
I just realized
that when
this thing popped up. Yeah, there we go.
Hello?
Hi.
Okay.
We were talking about how it was annoying that Beltran had to get another cortisone shot, right, when he seemed to be starting to get hot again.
Well, yeah. Because 2014.
This is why we can't have nice things.
2014.
like right now, the offense, I mean, even Gardner is in a slump. And since Gardner's been their best overall player, that's just really crippling. So it's Prado's hot. And I think Headley had a good hit today. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, he's been pretty good all around. I think he's been the best player one of the best players the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, and he provides so much value on defense too, just because he's diving all over the place, and it's just like such a step up from Yanervis Solarte and stuff.
Yeah, I mean Headley's not going to wow you offensively. No. I mean he's like a league average hitter, but like he's made some crazy plays.
Definitely.
I mean he's already worth 6.5 runs defensively.
Well, that doesn't
in like 25 games, which is obviously small sample size stuff, but like that's already second on the team, and first is Brian McCann.
Yeah, it's small sample size, but it's still clear that you're doing something right if you're causing weirdness.
Like yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. So, I don't know. It's really complicated with the whole A-Rod thing, but I would really like Headley to be playing next year for the Yankees, but could just be a pipe dream.
Yeah, I couldn't even begin to guess their offseason plan at this point. I think they're, well, first of all, we have to see and make sure that Brian Cashman is coming back. Pretty sure he is, but it's going to be a couple months before can they even start like thinking about like free agents, and maybe some people might even get extended before then, because I think like Hunter Pence was going to be a free agent for last year, or maybe this year, but then the Giants extended him in like September or something like that. So
yeah. I can't even imagine, just because not only do they have so many holes and question marks and weird payroll things, but the free agent market's garbage, and if they really wanted to get something, they'd have to pay a huge premium again, or they'd have to trade and basically get rid of their whole farm system if they want to get anyone of note.
Yep.
So.
We'll see. But as of now, they're going to be... Well, one of their hopes for 2015 is that they can get Masahiro Tanaka back without having him have to get Tommy John surgery, and he seems to be going all right in his rehab. Obviously, I've said this before, but we're in like uncharted waters where we don't really know how long he's going to be able to keep up avoiding it. But the rehab seems to be going all right with the platelet-rich plasma therapy, and he's going to throw off a mound, or he's pitching to live hitters this weekend or something?
Yeah, he's live batting practice. And I think he's thrown every single type of his repertoire. He's thrown fastballs, curveballs, and splitters.
Okay,
I don't know.
Last I heard, he was only throwing fastballs. That's good if he's expanded now.
Yeah, I don't know what the velocity is. I'm sure it's, you know, not anything great, but it's still better than nothing.
Yes. Yeah, anything good right now is about him as much needed.
Yeah, and I'm not even... I would like to see him back before the end of the season, but if he's not, and he's still able to come back for 2015 without needing surgery, then that's a huge win.
Oh, so, yeah. Like that, yeah.
I agree.
Please, Tanaka. I don't... The 2015 rotation is going to be interesting anyway, so if they could just have Tanaka in there, that would be...
Yeah,
very reassuring.
Just for the sake of being fun, like I would be excited. I would be very, very excited for the spring and for everything if I just knew he was coming back. Because just watch, like I said, the watchability with him and the team is really great. Because every time he pitched, it's like I gotta watch the game. Like I have to, no matter what. So him coming back is just it's a boon every 5 days. But it's also, I think some people have brought this up about the attendance and the TV ratings. He's a big part of that because a lot of people were tuning in to watch him pitch, as well as the Jeter farewell tour. But there's obviously the concern about whether people are going to even watch the team next year, which is completely up in the air.
Yes, I am pro Tanaka coming back.
I think most people are.
I am also pro Brandon McCarthy coming back.
Yes, absolutely.
Very much so, yes.
Jeez.
Well, you know, you shouldn't be throwing that damn cutter. You know what the Diamondbacks say.
No, you want the pitches to hit people, not go away from them.
What a waste.
be grittier, Brandon. What?
Well, it's interesting because they were saying that whatever his cutter had, I think whatever the cutter had intrinsically has some analytical value according to what they had released. But I think also, just more than that, it gives him such a variety of pitches to work with. He was basically just using, like, at the beginning of the season, he was throwing 70% sinkers, which his sinker probably is pretty good, but if you're throwing it 70% of the time, I'm just going to be like, all right, I'll just wait for him to throw a sinker in the middle of the plate.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it helps on days like today when he was able to crank the fastball up to, like, 94 miles an hour, which for him is great. That's about as hard as he's going to throw.
Yeah, his velocity's been great. I mean, all year his velocity's been pretty good, but since he's laid off the four-seamer, he hasn't been able to actually take advantage of that.
And knock on wood is he's been pretty healthy, too. I think this is like his career high in innings so far.
No,
combined.
Starts.
And starts, not
this
innings?
He had 25 starts, I think, with the A's, and this was like his 26th start.
Okay.
Something like that.
He's also at a career high in innings?
I'm going to say probably.
I mean, if he's made this many starts, then probably.
Yeah, I'm going to say that. No, it's not a career high in innings. In 2011, when he had 25 starts, it was 170 and two-thirds. But I'd assume that if he's still healthy for the rest of the season, he would eclipse that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I would be very happy to see him in the rotation next year, just because
he's
been so reliable. I know he's an injury risk, but you got to go with what's effective.
Well, I mean, if it has to do with the size of his contract, that type of discount rate would already be baked into the calculation of his contract itself. So the risk would be there, but I'm sure it would be a calculated risk. And, you know, I don't think they're going to give him, like, a Kuroda-type contract of, like, $16 million a year. But the ceiling of his contract, he would give you what Kuroda gave you when he was with the Yankees, like, last year and the year before.
I'm sure his agent was ecstatic that he got traded to the Yankees, and now his, you know, now his traditional stats are up again too.
Yeah, but I'm sure most teams are aware, were aware that his peripherals were much better.
Oh, probably, but it can't hurt.
Yeah.
So McCarthy will be one of the Yankees' targets in the offseason. One of the targets we're supposedly hearing about right now is Ruzney Castillo, who is a second baseman / outfielder, kind of like Rob Refsnyder position-wise, from Cuba, and he's a great mystery. So it's really hard to say for sure what we know about him. It sounds like he has an interesting bat, not like a huge power hitter like a Cespedes. He's a good line drive guy, but what have you guys heard about him?
I really don't know much about him, but certainly seems intriguing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've heard mixed things about him. Some scouts think he's a fringy guy. And other teams think a lot of scouts have said that he's a major league regular player. Like, he's a 50 all-around player, pretty much. And he would be, you know, I mean, Cespedes' power has a lot of power, but, like, I think he's a little bit overrated in the sense that he's, like, generally, like, a major league regular type of player. And his one plus tool is his power and his arm. So I guess in terms of the amount of value you're going to get, it would be similar to a Cespedes, where you're going to get like a normal average player at a position. That would be I think what people's expectations are. But the cost is going to be like $55 million. And it could also have the Jose Abreu clause and Cespedes clause, where they're allowed to apply for arbitration after 3 years. So that could be much more than $55 million if he's good. And if the Yankees wanted to put him at second base, which is what they've been saying, then you may not even get the full value out of him because you're basically sticking him at a positional adjustment where you're not going to get the full value of his defense if his defense is any good. So I don't know. And the Yankees have to pay the full amount like under the luxury tax, so it would probably be way more expensive than just the $55 million or whatever they're estimating it's going to be.
Yeah, way, Well, that's the estimate too. I mean, we also thought that some of these other guys, like Aledmys Diaz and Arispe Arruabarrena, were going to get a lot more than they did too. So it's possible that despite the reports, it could cost less. But obviously, we just have no way of knowing until we finally hear who he's going to sign with. But the Red Sox, Tigers, Giants, Phillies, they're all in on him.
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, the low end would be like an Alexander Guerrero type deal, and he got like 4 years, $28 million.
Yeah.
So you're not going to go any really lower than that because it's a pretty general consensus that he's better than Guerrero. Guerrero was a fringy guy. They weren't sure if he was going to be major league ready. That's why they sent him to the minors initially. They don't think that Castillo is going to be in the minors. They think that ideally people want him to sign now. They think he's going to get a week's worth of reps in the minors and then just start playing. That's the underlying assumption. So, I don't know. I wouldn't want the Yankees to make a move just for the sake of making a move. Because then it would be, you know, a la Keigawa. Because, oh, we just have to sign to keep up with the Joneses. I don't think they should do that. I don't know. I don't think they will. I don't think that's going to happen. But I wouldn't want them to just make the move so that other people don't make it instead.
Yeah, and he's 27, too, so he's, like, older, I think, than most of these Cuban guys that have come over, so that's another thing to factor in as well. It does sound like he could come up to the majors pretty soon. I imagine he'll need a little bit of time in the minors, as you said. Like, maybe it is just a week of reps, but maybe it's more if he struggles in that. I don't know. It's just this... the Cuban player is always such an enigma because it's just really hard to guess how their skills would transfer from Cuba to the United States. Yeah. Because while you've had guys who were able to make the transition, you know, kind of like Puig, Jose Fernandez, Puig, Cespedes, going back further, El Duque, some of these guys have succeeded, but a bunch of them just have not panned out at all. So it's,
yeah, I mean, look at Contreras. Contreras was, like, considered the next big thing. And he was like, eh.
Yeah, he was only okay. And he had, like, maybe, like, one or two great years that didn't even end up being on the Yankees. So.
Yeah, exactly. So, you never know. And I know the Yankees are probably kicking themselves because they didn't go in on Puig. They didn't go on Cespedes. They didn't go on, you know, Darvish. And they weren't bold when they... when the inefficiency was there. And now they're kind of eating, you know, kicking themselves because now the prices are going up and there'll probably be some other system they're going to put into place, some international draft or some reforms to how they sign Cuban players. So this age of signing Cuban players for a steal is going to be over eventually. So I don't know.
We've already seen them take steps to remedy their international presence through all the millions of dollars they threw at 16 and 17 year olds back in July.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
I think that's a better move than spending all that money on Castillo, because in theory the surplus value you're going to get is going to be much higher with those guys you spend on 16 year olds, because I'm going to make a bold statement and say that one of them is going to be a major league regular player, at least, you know, out of the many of them that they signed. So if one of them is a decent player, which I would assume one of them will be, you've already basically recouped the whole value of the amount of money you spent.
Yeah, it's the same idea. It's like, you know, winning or buying a whole bunch of lottery tickets. Maybe you don't win at all, but at least you have a better chance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And with Castillo, there's a good chance that he turns into nothing, and then you're basically just wasting the money, and then the money you spend with luxury tax. So it could be, you know, at best, you're just making up the money in terms of value or keeping yourself even in terms of efficiency. So,
yeah, I mean, I would be okay if they signed him, but I'm also not going to be like, no, Cashman, terrible, fire him if they don't.
Yeah.
Someone will, though.
Oh, well, people already are.
I mean, like I said, they passed on Guerrero, and I thought that was... and people were like, why did they pass on him? You know, they need a shortstop, and Guerrero hasn't played, you know, at all on the major league level, and the Dodgers have already paid him like $7 million.
And he's recovering from bite wounds.
Yes, that too.
Oh, man. He was the one that was bit by, oh, what was the guy's crazy name? Miguel Olivo? Is that him?
Yeah.
Yes, that was him.
What a crazy asshole. Oh, and also, update on Aledmys Diaz. He's hitting okay for the Cardinals AA affiliate, but he also has a 1.6% walk rate.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, you know. Two walks in 125 plate appearances in AA.
Yikes.
Yeah. Even Peter O'Brien's like, dude.
He's like, come on, take some pitches.
So Soriano is like concerned for him.
Ah, Soriano. He was a thing.
Seems so long ago, but it's really not.
No, it was just like a month and a half ago. He's still on the team, flailing away. Yeah. He was going to the airport in his nice suit.
With one single tear on his cheek.
Yep. Okay. So, I think, is that all our topics? We could talk about roster expansion next week, I think, when we're getting closer to the August 30th, 31st dates.
Yeah.
So that, you know, by then, I mean, for all we know, someone will get injured in the next week. Hopefully not, but maybe we'll get a better idea of who's going to get called up in September, too, then.
Yeah.
Another thing that happened this week, Matt F. went to a Scranton game. Why don't you tell us about that?
I did. Unfortunately, they lost 11-2, and none of the like intriguing players really did anything. But I went with Greg Kirkland, a longtime listener from Pittsburgh Valley, and we had a lovely little time. I've said this before. I wrote an article about this about last April, I want to say. But Scranton is a beautiful stadium, and if you ever have a chance to come here and see a game, I highly recommend it.
It seems pretty nice.
Yeah, it used to not be, but they did a really nice job remodeling it.
Yeah, I heard the place they used to play was just not attractive at all.
No, it wasn't. It was like, it was sort of like a version of like the all-purpose like vet stadiums, only like the vet and the old Busch Stadium, only for baseball and not necessary.
Maybe that's what broke AC Sponsor. We just didn't know it yet.
Yeah.
When do they make these renovations?
The AAA team played like across various stadiums in New York in 2012, and they did all of them during that season. And they started back here in Scranton in 2013.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
but it's like
And they were the roving Yankees, basically.
Yeah.
In the prequels days. Dark times.
All years are numbered as BQ and AQ.
Yes.
Before and after Quills.
How was Quills?
He was being his normal Quillsian self, dancing. Greg got a picture with him.
Of course he did.
I managed to find a pack of 2014 Rare Riders cards, and I bought mainly because there was a Quills card. And it claimed that his birthplace was Venezuela.
Womp womp.
I'm going to assume it was a typo. Well, it was a typo. Because the card right before it was Luis Soho, who was a coach for the Rare Riders. And it lists his birthplace as the same one as Quills, like Caracas, Venezuela. So,
welp. Did you see the? Ref Snyder look? Did he play that day?
He did. He did nothing. I think Perella got a single, but Venditti pitch. He was all right.
Oh yeah, I was watching that weirdness where. I guess people aren't confused by that anymore because he's been pitching in that league for a while now, so.
No, and I think, like, unless you're paying attention, you really wouldn't notice it.
That's true, yeah.
I think it might cause someone who didn't really watch a ton of baseball, like, maybe do a double take when they saw the same pitchers, like, going from different arm angle.
I mean, like, most of the people there are, like, or at least last night, it was a lot of, like, dads there with a bunch of, like, little league kids, and I don't think they were paying enough attention to notice that they were switching arms.
They didn't notice what they're seeing.
And what did you think of, what did you think of Perella?
I mean, he got a hit, so that was all right, but he didn't do anything that impressive. Like, nothing was really hit to him in right field, and I think he grounded into a double play, but I don't know. Everyone else pretty meh last night.
Yeah, no, like, really Brian Mitchell got hit pretty hard, too, right?
Oh, yeah, he was not good. The one person, well, Taylor Dudas had, like, a nice catch and left, and I think he had, like, two hits. Other than that, no one really stood out at all.
Huzzah!
Yep. Not a banner night for AAA team.
Hopefully next year it'll get a bit more exciting with maybe, you know, maybe Gary Sanchez coming up, maybe, I'm blanking on people on AAA
now. Greg Bird.
Yeah, maybe Greg Bird next year. Maybe
Mason Williams.
So, did you see the scouting report of Mason Williams today that was released?
No, I did not. To guess that it probably was not glowing.
It was the opposite of glowing. He was listed as a realistic roll of 20. The most concerning part about Williams' game was the effort. I did not get the impression that he cared, and it often felt like he had already lost or failed before he stepped up to bat. The makeup issues are real, and he might be feeling the stress of a disastrous season. Williams is a project at this point, and one that will likely never be finished. There are too many gaps and inconsistencies in his game for him to provide any value at the highest level.
Woof.
And with that, he bids everyone adieu.
Oh, yeah, he is. It's been some time since 2012, which I think was, like, the last time he was actually pretty interesting.
Yep. But on the opposite token, they did post a scouting report of Lindgren, and that was the opposite of bad.
He's another fun guy that could find his way to AAA next year. Also, Luis Severino. That's true. Lindgren could probably find his way. He could find his way to the majors this year, as you talked about. He might even go to AAA pretty soon.
See. I think I saw a tweet to that effect last night.
That's true, yeah.
I forgot who it was, though.
Jed Wegley, something like that. I feel bad. Jed Weisberger. I said Jed Wedley because his Twitter handle is Jedly Q. not Jedward.
Jed worked.
That showed up when I was searching Jed on Twitter. So AAA could get it pretty interesting next year. But for now, you know, it's Rob Refsnyder and I guess everyone else. But who started catcher? Was it Romine?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because I think Murphy's still DL'd as far as I know.
I think they activated him yesterday.
Oh, okay.
But Romine, it was Romine last night.
Romine going to Romine. So that sounds like pretty fun night despite the Scranton failure, but you know, still the Electric City.
What?
The Electric City. Okay, so you can probably go straight into your B-Ref segment now too, man.
So I found that the one stat that seems to come up with like a lot of funny results when you try and find like bad players is game score for pitching.
Mm-hmm.
So what I went through this time is I found the most consecutive sub 50 game scores.
Nice.
In Yankees history. And the trend continues because the results are fairly amusing. The leader all time is Atlee Donald with 14.
14 straight of an under 50 game score.
Yes.
Welp.
You go through some of them, aren't that like terrible? They're like 5 innings. But over the course of this streak, he had a 6.69 ERA.
Well,
yikes.
What year was this?
Yeah, what year was this one?
It started in June 43 and ended in May 44.
Ah, the good old World War II years. That was probably the only reason he was pitching.
Yep.
And, like, well, funnily enough, like, he put through his, like, game log. There are, like, relief appearances in there, too. So he was, like, the, I don't know, whoever you want to say, of his day.
Like a Ramiro Mendoza, yeah. Alcevez 2009 version.
I'd say he's the more...
Alcevez this year.
Yeah.
That's true, yeah. Well, I don't think they ever gave Alcevez a start. They're like, no.
Well, he got one.
He got a start this year?
Maybe?
I think he did have one start.
I thought they were, like, too scared to do it. I need to check.
No, I think they did it.
And he had that one, like, good outing against the Rays where he went, like,
No, he didn't have a start.
He didn't?
No.
Must have been imagining that.
I thought he did, too, so.
He actually only appeared in 10 games, which feels like a lot fewer than he actually did.
Well, his...
The only one, two of the games he pitched in. But anyway, this is about Atlee Donald and crew, not Seves. So...
Well, funnily enough, tied for second is Jeff Weaver with 11.
Doesn't surprise me at all.
Was that 2003?
Yep, from April to June in 2003. He's tied with someone named Jeff Johnson from 1991.
Well, those teams are terrible, so...
I'm sure Jeff
Johnson fit in well.
Well, his ERA in that streak was 9.41.
Not bad, Obama.
Then on 10 is Joe Niekro from 86, Russ Van Atta from 1934, and the immortal Cuddles Marshall.
Cuddles? He was not providing cuddles during that streak.
On 9 is the aptly named Sad Sam Jones.
Sad Sam Jones did throw a no-hitter one time.
Did that make him happy? Or is he still just sad?
No, still sad. Still sad. Well, actually, he threw a no-hitter, but he didn't strike out anyone. So.
Yeah, whatever.
I find that
ground ball.
How does one throw a no-hitter and not strike out anyone? I get that it was, like, the 20s, but still.
He, like, makes it through the third inning. He's like, oh, I'm never going to get this. And starts, like, throwing up, like, 33-mile-an-hour fastballs. And they somehow get ground out. Everyone grounds out somehow.
Sounds like Francisco Liriano's no-hitter. The least impressive no-hitter.
Didn't he also have, like, a bunch of walks, too? Didn't he have, like, five walks or something?
Yeah, because it was one of the really bad ones with that.
AJ Burnett also threw a no-hitter where he walked like six or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Javi Vasquez had two separate streaks of eight, and one spawned his two stints in New York. It started in 04 and ended in May 2010.
So basically, like, he was just... Yeah, that's right, he ended 2004 poorly, and then it just continued when he came back and he started poorly again.
Yep. The thing was, I wanted to go even worse, like sub 25, but actually, weirdly, there are like streets of really good pitchers. Like, I think the most was like three, and it was Mussina had one, and like, Edit might have had one. So I found 50 was the perfect number for funniness, as Kayagawa had a one.
All right. So, no tweet bag questions this week. So, we'll move straight on to the Yankee and the Mitre of the Week. Matt P., your Yankee of the Week.
Brandon McCarthy.
He's doing things.
Yeah, for being a good pitcher. And striking at everyone and walking no one.
Four hit shutout. Only threw like 106 pitches, too. Almost to Maddox.
Yep, pretty close.
Probably closest the Yankees have had to someone throwing a Maddox this year. I think Tanaka came relatively close. Either way, great day for Brandon McCarthy.
My Yankee of the Week pick is Shane Green. He had another pretty nice outing on, I guess it was Sunday, where he shut down the Rays and helped the Yankees get a series win in Tampa.
My Yankee of the Week is going to go to Martin Prado. Not many people on the offense have been hitting, but he has, so good for him. Even though he hasn't really walked, he has a 162 WRC plus over the past week. And yeah. he's tried to spark some rallies and got a home run, so he's doing his thing. Which is good because people were starting to knock the trade. And it's like, well, they just gave it Peter O'Brien. So whatever.
Yeah.
All right, Matt P. or Mitre of the week?
Derek Jeter, unfortunately. Just as they put him in as a DH, he doesn't. I mean, he's had a batting average. It looks okay of .286, but pretty much all singles. So.
Yeah, very, very, very empty batting average. Kind of like Ben Revere's.
Yeah, he's pretty much been Ben Revere this year.
Without the defense.
Yeah.
You think? I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Derek Jeter is not as good at shortstop as Ben Revere is in center.
No.
Big, if true.
Okay, so I will go with David Huff for my Mitre of the Week because I did not see Wednesday's night game, but from the bot story, it cannot be pretty.
All right, my Mitre of the Week is going to go to Esmiel Rogers because, you know, he had... I mean, he had that start that was fun to watch, but since then he's been pretty dreadful, and he was a big reason why they lost to the Astros on Wednesday night. The offense needed to come up with more, but he also entered the game, gave up four straight hits, and that pretty much gave the Astros a pretty sizable lead at that point. So,
yeah, I mean, I'm not that surprised. It was going to come crashing down eventually.
No, it wasn't a shocker. It was just kind of like, oh well.
Everyone's got to be the Mitre at some point.
Yep. Some days, we're all go there. All right. Well, that'll do it for the Pinstripe Alley podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Pinstripe Alley. You can follow the GIFs account at PSA_GIFs. Follow me on Twitter at MernsPSA. Follow Matt F. on Twitter at MattF15. Follow Matt Provenzano on Twitter at MattProv94. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/PinstripeAlley. And rate and review us on iTunes. Always appreciate feedback. And submit to the tweet bag. I was a bit late putting up the tweet bag this week, so I feel like that's mostly on me. That one of the reasons why we didn't get any questions. So apologize for that. We'll be timelier with that next week. The afternoon game didn't help. But either way, we'll be back next week with a new podcast. Hopefully the Yankees decide to start winning against the White Sox, another team they're supposed to beat, because then they have a tough schedule ahead of them with, it's weird calling the Royals a tough schedule, but they have a makeup game of the Royals next Monday. The Royals are playing very well. Then they're playing 3 in Detroit, so that'll be fun. Hopefully it'll go as well as the last series against Detroit did.
Yeah.
Would you support that?
Yes, would endorse.
Yes. All right. So from Matt F. and Matt P., this is Andrew Mearns. Have a good night.